So tonight, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Lisa to share, sing her song of recovery to us. And I've just seen Lisa really growing in her recovery, and it's a great pleasure. And this is also, I asked Lisa after her birthday a month ago, but I'll let her share with us about that. So, Lisa, thank you so much, and over to you. Oh, do you mind it being recorded, Lisa?
Not at all. Is it 20 minutes? I forgot to ask.
20 minutes to half an hour, yes,
Okay.
please. Thank you, Lisa. It's
Thanks.
been quite a big meeting tonight. Thank
Yeah.
you.
Thanks, Hilma Ray. Hi, everyone. I'm an addict. My name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey,
Lisa. Lisa, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hi everyone. Okay, you made me smile now. I'm going to be silly. I'm going to start laughing. It's such a privilege and an honor to be asked to speak at this meeting. Thank you for your lovely introduction, Hilma Ray, and thank you for asking me, and thank you for your service, and also thank you to Tony and Ellie and Christine for your service in this meeting. I think that's everyone. I've not been here for a while. I used to be a regular at this meeting, and it's actually just trying to figure out balance with my kind of health limitations that actually stopped me coming here. I have service that I do on a Thursday lunchtime, so it's really hard for me. Well, it's become really hard for me to do two meetings in one day, or any more than one. I do go to a meeting a day, but yeah, I can only do one, which is probably enough. It's okay. I give myself a hard time about these things, but it does mean I miss this meeting, and that does make me sad because I've always loved this meeting. It was really important for me when I first came into recovery to find other people that were, that had struggled with addiction or struggle with addiction, and also have secondary health concerns. Because I'm quite physically limited. I've got ME, which I got when I was 22, after I got the Epstein-Barr virus, which, isn't that unusual of a thing to get. It's kind of just one of those viruses that people get. But I got that, and I got better from that, from the virus, but I got really, really ill, and I got more and more ill just over time. At that time in my life, I lived in Aberdeen in Scotland. I am from and live in Shetland, but I lived in Aberdeen then, and I had my own flat, which was on the second floor, and I knew that there was something wrong with me because I could barely walk up the stairs. I would have to, after like a couple of steps, I would have to sit down. And I was quite a fit, kind of a fit person. I did a lot of walking and things like that. I wasn't it was just it just changed my physicality a great, great deal. I just became unable to do the things that I was used to doing. I was at university at the time. I had to give that up in my final year, and I had stopped working, and I had to move back home to Shetland. I had to live with my mum at that time. I do have my own house now with my boyfriend, but well, it's a council house, but it's ours. Yeah, but we got that. So he's kind of like my primary carer, as is my mum. There's a lot of difficulty in that, just in and of itself. There's so many things I could start speaking about. I'm already trying to kind of keep myself on track. Yeah, so I got my own, oh, I can't even remember what I was saying. Okay, so yeah, so like everything that I was used to doing, kind of the independence that I had, was all kind of disappearing before my eyes. I was already an avid drug user and fan, but it wasn't kind of impacting on my life in that I wasn't able to, you know, like hold down a job or anything. I was kind of mostly a weekend user, but I did use most days. It's hard to remember now. It was such a long time ago. But yeah, for the last 10 years of my using, things got really dark and they changed. I got, you know, when I got ill, nobody knew what was wrong with me. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. All my blood tests came back perfect. As far as doctors were concerned, I was in perfect health. They were just like, you know, keep going, you know. And I tried that and that didn't work. Now, it turns out now, you know, with having had ME now for 13 years and reading a lot of research, the worst advice you can be given is to keep going and do more. It's just not the way that it helps this illness. But yeah, so I didn't know that then. And it just made me feel crazy, the whole thing. It's still quite badly stigmatized I've got cats jumping on me left and right. It's still very stigmatized within the medical community, but I mean, within any community. Kind of, it's weird. It's an invisible illness, and it kind of, I think to a lot of people, it kind of presents as just laziness or not trying hard enough, that kind of thing. So it was not only like a physical blow, it was a mental blow, because I wasn't able to do all these things. And then I was also, it was as if I'd woken up one day and everybody around me was speaking a completely different language. But they were looking at me like I was the weird one because I didn't understand them and I wasn't able to speak it. It was like that. It was a very strange experience where all of a sudden I was super ill, but I didn't really have any, kind of support at that point anyway. There's nothing that can be really done for the illness itself. You kind of just get given, I can't think of any words right now. It's basically they prescribe you for the symptoms or whatever. The doctor will prescribe for symptoms. And I was put on antidepressants and opiate painkillers. And that was that. But the thing is that I was quite delighted about this prescription for painkillers. I thought it was great. I thought, like, I was prescribed something that made me feel much better, emotionally as well as physically. I just didn't care about things anymore. I was just like chilled out. It just to me felt like kind of the answer to all my problems at that time. I was happy about the prescription. It's hard for me to admit that because I've lied about that for so long. But yeah, I was happy to be on it, and I felt like it was, you know, okay. I'm being told I can take this up to, you know, four times a day, so I definitely was always going to take it at the maximum. And then before I knew it, that just got really out of control. And I can't say it was like a shock or that I wasn't prepared for it, because I kind of knew. I mean, I can remember at the time knowing, like, okay, if you take this, like, this is like more than you're prescribed. If you take this, you're going over a line that you're never going to come back from. And I would be taking it earlier and earlier in the day and taking it later and later. You know, like it was becoming really difficult to manage because I was using so many that my prescription that was supposed to last me a month would be done after a couple of days. And I mean, I just became a different person. I really like everything inside of me needed the drugs and wanted the drugs, and I kind of, you know, tortured and terrorized my family and my friends, and I lied, I manipulated, I was gaslighting people. You know, my mum would have a lock box that she would keep my prescriptions in, because by a certain point, I wasn't allowed to hold my own prescriptions, and I would find a way to get into this locked box. Like, most people would just kind of, I imagine, would stop at the locked box. They'd be like, you know what, this is a sign I shouldn't take anymore. You know, she's telling me not to keep stealing my own drugs from her. I was like, I'm going to look up, I'm going to learn how to like pick a lock. So that was my kind of thing. You know, the things like that. And then I would get the drugs from inside the box. I would take them. And then my mum would be like, oh my God, I can't find them. And I would be like, well, you're going to have to phone the doctor and sort that out. I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, it was like really just like mean. It wasn't like I was trying to be a bad person. You know, I needed the drugs more than I needed to be kind to other people. And, you know, I assumed other people's identities to get drugs, because a lot of the drugs I was getting were online. Because as I say, I mean, I became housebound. I can't remember how many years I've been actually housebound for. I don't know, 6, about 8 probably. I think I've been housebound for about 8. And I'm mostly in my bed. I have to be in bed most of the time, because sitting up or standing up is really difficult for me. My heart beats far too fast. My blood pressure gets really low, and I get really faint, and it's just really difficult. So I'm in, right now I'm in it's kind of like what you would have in a hospital with a little remote, like that kind of bed. That's when I come, this is, it's in my little room I have for meetings and things. I have that little bed. And that kind of makes me feel a little bit more like a normal human being, because I'm sitting up sometimes in it, and I've got like my laptop and everything. But yeah, so I'm in bed most of the time. And, you know, my legs still work. I'm very blessed in it. You know, I thank my higher power for that every single day. So yeah, my illness can appear a little confusing, because I can walk, but I'm mostly bedbound. And yeah, so I don't know where I got on from one to the other. Anyway, yes. So anyway, I'm an addict, and I've also got this health problem. I don't know where I was going with the whole using part of it. Basically, I keep going to say I was just a junkie, but I feel like that's not a good word to use about myself. You know, it's not that kind, but that is what I was. I was a junkie, and I was physically addicted to these drugs. And I did think that was the problem. I knew I was physically addicted. I wasn't afraid to say I was an addict. Maybe it was good as an excuse after a while. Like, I'm an addict, what do you want me to do about it? And I kind of just felt stuck in that life, and I didn't think I was going to get out of it. I did. Here I am. I ended up having a really bad overdose that put me into a coma. Well, no, the over, no, the over, well, no, I was put into a coma by the doctors to save my brain from any swelling and things like that. And, you know, it was pretty serious. And it was something that really scared the life out of me. You know, and it was a big wake up call for me, basically. I really realized when I came out of that coma and was told that it was an overdose, because I was convinced that it was COVID that I had when I woke up in this room. I thought I just had COVID. I was like, no, what are you talking about? I didn't overdose. because I really didn't think I would overdose. I was really convinced of my own, like, the control that I had in things. I felt like I was controlling, like, whether I overdosed or not. So yeah, that was absolute bullshit. But yeah, so I was very shocked by it, and that experience is what has brought me to NA, because it, you know, it scared the shit out of me. That's the only thing I can say. It scared me, and I was kind of finally a little bit of that, you know, the mask or the blindfold kind of slipped a little bit from my eyes, and I was able to see a little bit more clearly, a little bit more like, oh my God, did I really think that it was okay to act like that or to do that? Like, it was okay for me to treat my body like that and take drugs like that? It was the first time I really had that sort of reality check in in the whole 10 years of that time. Yeah. And so, yeah, brought me to NA, which is where I'm, you know, it's my recovery has all been online. So I found HICNA just by searching for help for addicts in Shetland. And this is what came up. You know, this is the Highlands and Islands groups of NA. It was set up for people like myself because where I live and most of the Isles around Scotland, there isn't any NA in and around those places. I think the Highlands is similar, but I don't know as much about that. But yeah, there's a lot of places that there isn't any NA, or, you know, where people are isolated. I'm isolated because there isn't NA in Shetland, but I'm also isolated because I'm housebound, and I wouldn't be able to be a regular, like, physical meeting goer because, yeah, well, that just doesn't work. So, I mean, I'm super grateful for online meetings. It's brought me to meet all of you. I mean, there's so many people in this meeting tonight that I've known since, my first week of meetings. You know, I've gotten to know all these incredible people. You know, I met my sponsor in my first meeting online, and yeah, so I, you know, a lot of people go to physical meetings, but I have not done that. So yeah, so recovery for me is all online. And that's, yeah, that's, and it's, you know, for me, recovery for me has been, it's not just about learning how to deal with being an addict, although that is a big part of it. It's also learning how to be an addict that has ME and, you know, like, I mean, I suppose we do say, like, addiction is, you know, it's spiritual, it's mental, it's physical. We need to take care of all of those things. The physical, there's also the physical side of my health concerns and stuff as well, you know. I mean, I suppose I have mental health conditions as well that I never talk about. I have OCD, I have clinical depression and anxiety. Although, I mean, at the moment I'm not depressed, but I can get depression quite easily and things like that. So I have, for me, recovery is about taking care of all these areas. I'm not only just learning how to implement spiritual health, because I mean, I suppose that's a whole new thing for me. I'd never tried to have to work on my spiritual health before, but it's also about learning how to deal with the fact that I'm housebound, that I'm mostly bedbound, that I'm dealing with a lot of physical pain, and constant exhaustion, you know, having to really limit what I'm doing so that I don't overdo it and then crash. And if I have a crash, that's really bad because I end up having to lie completely flat with in the complete dark, no light, no sound. It's a really uncomfortable way to live. It's horrible. I've been able to kind of stop having those so much because in recovery I am trying to, you know, I'm learning how to listen to my body and take care of myself a little bit better. And somebody did tell me once that if you have spiritual health, then the physical and the mental will follow. So maybe kind of working on my spiritual health helps a lot with that too. You know, it helps me to kind of get a better perspective. I mean, there's so many things I've learned in recovery. So many tools that I have now, you know, a lot of people speak about that. It's another tool for the toolbox. I've gotten all these different tools now that I use. It's so different from the way I dealt with life before, which was like a lot of my ways of dealing with things were like avoid and deny. And recovery is about dealing with things and, you know, learning to live life on life's terms. That was in, you know, all that's very new for me because I'd never heard of that or thought about that before. I always wanted things to go my way and I always felt afraid because things clearly don't always go my way. And, you know, so I felt like I needed to try and control it. and I could never control it. And so that's where a lot of the OCD behavior, you know, kind of behaviors came in. And obviously drugs was really helpful because they stopped me from feeling things I didn't want to feel. And I felt like calmer and braver. I've always been a very kind of fearful, scared person, a worrier. And so it's, you know, recovery has been amazing in that it's helping me to become a little bit less fearful. You know, it's given me spiritual principles to practice, you know. What was I going to say there? I just lost my thread. I do that a lot. I apologize. I don't remember what I was going to say. Okay. I'll have to think of something else now. I was trying to explain like how I've learned to deal with my physical health issues in recovery. I mean, first of all, having an amazing sponsor really helps. I've been really lucked out with my sponsor because she's really understanding and loving about my health. I was very, you know, like upfront with her saying like, I'm afraid of speaking to people about it and I feel misunderstood. And she's always really kept that in the forefront of her mind when she's spoken to me about it. And, you know, it's said to me, you know, that she doesn't necessarily, she can't ever understand what it's like for me because she doesn't go through that, the same thing. But, you know, but she's still amazing about it, even though she says that. But, you know, like she encourages me to ask other people that are going through similar things. But, you know, just she's always been really good at helping me to look at rest as a positive thing. So like resting is something I have to do a lot of. It's like my full-time job, and rest sounds like, oh, that wouldn't be so bad. But when you have forced to rest, it's not fun. And I, you know, like I'm doing this meeting now, afterwards I will have to, you know, like lie down and meditate. I have to have complete relaxation and I have to make sure that like tomorrow I'm not doing anything because I've done this today. So I have to kind of like pace out my activities and map out my days so that if I'm doing something extra like this main chair and this meeting that I've got, you know, that I've rested before it, which I did today as well before the meeting, but I'm resting after it as well. I've always looked at it, the fact that I have to rest as something really shameful and embarrassing. I associate with like laziness and I grew up in a, I don't know if it was a family or society or both, you know, where I always felt like you had to constantly be doing things. And my sponsor's been amazing about reminding me that like rest is so important, and when I'm resting I'm taking care of myself. You know, it's like when I rest, when I meditate, when I pray, all of those, it's like they're acts of self-love. It's not a weakness. It's just like having that encouragement is incredible. I think just the people of NA in general are a huge part of what made me want to stay in NA and become and be a member, you know? It's just nice to feel a part of something and to feel so loved and accepted. You know, nobody gives a shit that I'm like, I'm housebound, that I'm bedbound, that I'm not that able. Like people just treat me like I'm just the same as them. And I feel loved, and that's an incredible thing. I do feel loved and accepted, and I feel like I have a place somewhere. And that's really important because I felt very outplaced. I mean, addiction, as I'm sure all of you know, makes you feel very on the outskirts of life. Having ME made me feel like that very much so. And, you know, it really took knocked my self-esteem a lot. But like coming into NA, it's like, nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit that I'm, you know, that where my drug use has taken me or took me, because everybody understands. We've all come from that same place. And so I didn't feel judged for that. And nobody gave a shit about the fact that I had this this physical health condition. You know, like, it that's been incredible. It's just to feel like I belong somewhere. I'm able to do service because it's, you know, it's online. So I feel like I'm doing something useful. You know, even just like now, I suppose I'm doing service because I'm sharing, and that is service. And like, just like feeling like I'm contributing to something is an amazing thing. My cat is now like scratching in the litter tray in the room behind me, and I feel like it's so loud that that's all you could hear. I don't know if you can hear it, but it feels loud in my head. So I apologize if you can. And my cats love to do all sorts of things when I'm sharing, so that they try and put me off. You know, I've got, yeah, just like it's just, yes, it's, I've got like a really dear friend who is also housebound, and we speak all the time. And like, I've got like that connection of like, we're both addicts. We're both absolutely mental, you know, and we've both got, you know, physical limitations that, you know, like, being housebound is a very unique, strange experience. So to have somebody that gets that is so important. It's going to make me cry. It's so important just to have people that understand, just to feel that support and that love. I feel like I'm going to have to close up because it's been 25 minutes and I want people to be able to share and, you know, participate in the meeting as well as just my voice. But there's so much I can say, and I feel like I overthink it so much that I forget to say the proper recovery stuff, you know. I was just like, when I share, as soon as I share, all I can think about, this is the truth, like, all I can think about is the people. And like, just like you, all you guys are just so incredibly amazing. I've just met so many incredible people, and like that keeps me going. That makes me like want to stay in recovery. As Hilma Ray mentioned, I recently celebrated 3 years clean, and it's such a blessing. Like, I feel so grateful for each and every single one of those days. I cannot believe that I am, you know, sitting here right now, speaking to all of you, and I've been clean for 3 years, and I just never thought it was possible for me to get off of drugs. I thought because I had this illness, I was limited to having to use like that for the rest of my life, which wasn't going to be much for much longer. I was very near death, but there's no reason that my illness needs to make me take drugs. That's the disease of addiction that wants me to believe that. I can have this physical illness, ME, and I can have all my other crap going on, and I can stay clean because I have NA, I have you guys, I've got the steps, I've got the service, you know, the meetings. There's just so much to this program. It's absolutely magical. And I'm just so blessed to be a part of it. I'm going to leave it there. As I say, I want people to be able to share and everything. But thank you so much, all of you. I'm so grateful for each and every one of you, and love you guys. Thank you.